All right, welcome back to Third String. We've got a special NBA playoff preview episode for you today, and I'm joined by Pete, as always, and also on this episode by Taylor Young, a fellow Austin resident with me. We were just talking before we started the podcast about how we met in Hobby Lobby, and Taylor, I think you described it as the place where all guys are meeting these days, right?
Yeah, it's pretty much where all male friendships start in 2018 in America.
Yeah, that's what they're saying.
Hobby Lobby framing section.
And certainly true in our case. So we're there at Hobby Lobby, and Taylor's getting this big poster of Kawhi Leonard framed. And we get to talking. Turns out Taylor is a rabid San Antonio Spurs fan and a contributor to Pounding the Rock, which is the Spurs SB Nation site. I think it's one of the most widely read, if not the most widely read, SB Nation blog out there. Because the Spurs are, of course, a great team with a very dedicated fan base. So Taylor Young's one of the contributors there. He's written a lot of posts for Pounding the Rock. If you want to go check it out, you can go search Taylor Young over on Pounding the Rock. But Taylor, welcome to Third String.
Thanks, Zach. Excited to be on.
Yeah, man. So we want to keep this short. We're trying to keep our episodes shorter. Pete and I just did a short episode yesterday, and we were talking about how our listeners want to hear from us less. So we're trying to give the people what they want. What I want to do is go through each of the eight NBA playoff matchups real quick, spend a couple minutes on each, and kind of talk about things to look for, what we think is going to happen, and how it's going to shake out. And since you're a Spurs fan, I want to start with Warriors-Spurs. Warriors with the 2 seed in the West, Spurs with a 7. This is the lowest seed the Spurs have had in the playoffs since the 2009-10 season. But of course, they went on to upset their first-round opponent there, and I'm sure you remember that. So let's talk briefly Warriors-Spurs, and then I want to get your thoughts on Kawhi Leonard. And in fact, let's just start with Kawhi Leonard, since we already told the poster story. Where do you think Kawhi Leonard is going to be next year? What's going on with this whole Kawhi drama this year?
Man, so this season has definitely put me and my spoiled Spurs fandom in perspective, because this season has totally been really torturous as a Spurs fan with the Kawhi stop start, not ever really knowing what's actually going on, hearing conflicting reports from within the organization, what people like Woj and at ESPN have said. But it has put it in perspective. This is most sports fans' entire lives, and I've just had one season of it, and it's made me go crazy. So
right, yeah,
I don't know. At the beginning of the season, obviously it was weird, but you kind of just felt like it was the Spurs doing their normal thing of keeping the long-term goal in mind and being extra conservative. Before Woj and ESPN had this story about Kawhi potentially being on a different rehab schedule, the San Antonio media actually had that several weeks before. So it started to leak out that he was on his own rehab timeline, and obviously things have just broken down from there. But it's really weird, because if you look at the verbiage and the words that are used from people like ESPN, they use more harsher tones, like there's a divide, there's a chasm, there's right. a chilling. But then the Spurs and the San Antonio beat writers, they use more soft language, like, hey, they're just being cautious. Kawhi's being cautious. The Spurs support him. So I really have no idea when Pop and Kawhi have actually addressed the situation. They have put a lot of the rumors and things to rest. But the fact that since the players only meeting, he's been absent, the Tony Parker comments about his injury being 100 times worse were probably ill-timed. Kawhi's been up in New York, and I would think that if he's not on the bench during the playoffs, that's a bad sign. I still think he'll be in San Antonio next year. I can think of 219 million reasons why he would probably still benefit from being in San Antonio by being able to sign the Supermax this summer. But sure. I'll also say I'm losing faith every day. So, yeah.
So if you were a betting man, would you bet straight up that he's going to be back next year or that he's not?
Yeah, I would say that if my life depended on it, I would definitely feel a little shaky, but I still think he's going to be in a Spurs uniform long term, because the Spurs, they're equipped to handle these types of situations. Obviously, this is getting into uncharted territory, But I mean, last summer, LaMarcus Aldridge wanted a trade. Pop sat him down. They were able to work through it. Tim Duncan almost left in the offseason of the year 2000 to the Orlando Magic to join Grant Hill and Tracy McGrady. Pop sat him down with some wine. You know, the thing is, though, maybe Kawhi is wired differently. Maybe he's wired differently than Tim Duncan, David Robinson, Manu, and Tony. Maybe he's even wired differently than LaMarcus. And I think there's an interesting relationship going on with his business, his uncle, his business manager, Dennis Robertson. And I think maybe if his uncle has gotten his ear to the point where he's, for some reason, convinced him he's better off outside of San Antonio, I don't really understand that, how that could be looked at rationally. But yeah, I mean, maybe he has more sway than we think and more sway than Pop does in Kawhi's ear. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to make any predictions here because Kawhi's been a distraction in the sense that he has been so quiet and so opaque and so tough to read. Like on the pod last night, in the episode we recorded, we talked about Dez Bryant being released, and that opened up a conversation about OBJ on the Giants. And like OBJ and athletes like him are distractions because they're so, you know, flamboyant and boisterous and, you know, showing up on Instagram with what may or may not be drugs. But Kawhi is like the opposite of that, you know, like no social media accounts, no social media following, a very, very close knit, tight lipped group of friends, does not like to talk to the media. So it's really tough to know what's going on. But do you have any theories about what's actually going on? Is this a lingering injury? Is this a case of the yips? Is this a psychological thing that he's had to fight through? Is he dissatisfied with his contract? Like, what are the reasons or the reason that he's not been playing this season?
Yeah, so I think that if you take conspiracy theories out of it, like he's all of a sudden randomly just decided to be a Laker or go to another team or a bigger market, obviously that would really be treading into conspiracy theories waters. But what I think happened is this is clearly a chronic issue. The Spurs didn't misdiagnose it as quad tendinopathy, but he had it a couple years ago. They went through a rehab program, but obviously it lingered and came back last summer. And I think Kawhi's feeling was, hey, I've had this a couple times and it keeps coming back. And the Spurs rehab that they keep putting me through obviously isn't working. He got a second opinion. He was always cleared maybe by the Spurs doctors. And it seems like they've just been on different pages. And I think when he tried to come back for those 9 games, he couldn't explode off that leg. And he just felt that this maybe the Spurs rushed him back. And I think there's just been a breakdown in communication with the Spurs, really trying to convince him to trust their doctor, trust their medical staff, and trust the rehab process that has been successful in the past. And the Spurs have a great track record with extending their players' careers. And I just think for whatever reason, there's a distrust because of this injury. And I think you look at somebody like Isaiah Thomas, who probably rushed back and cost himself $100 million or more. And Kawhi has this supermax contract coming up worth $219 million this summer. And I think he's smart to not want to jeopardize that. And I think Kawhi has a singular focus on basketball. He wants to be one of the all-time greats. So I don't think it's a situation where he, knowing how he's wired and how competitive he is, that he would refuse to play. And I think injuries get in people's heads, but I also think they have the ability to make people, you know, extremely sad and depressed when that is ability to play is ripped away from you. And I think coupled with the fact Kawhi is already probably pretty reclusive and the Spurs are very tight-lipped, it's just been almost a perfect storm for a frustrating situation to occur. I really think it's all about the injury, and if the injury can get solved and they still offer him the contract, everything's going to be fine. But if for some reason the miscommunication or the chasm, if you will, has gotten to the point where there is a big enough divide and the Spurs feel like they need to trade him, then I don't know. I guess that could happen too. But I really think it is all the injury and the differences of opinion about the injury and how to treat it.
Yeah, fair enough. I love the deep dive on Kawhi. We've eaten up a lot of our time, so I want to push on to talk about some of these matchups. But let's stay on the Spurs theme at least. Warrior Spurs, where do you think this series goes?
I think Pop maybe works some magic and we get a game, maybe two. We have a Manu Ginobili magical game as well. But it's disappointing because, you know, with no Curry in the first round and no Patrick McCaw for the Warriors, if Kawhi somehow did do a WWE-style shocking return, the Spurs could actually give the Warriors a run for their money and maybe win this series. Like, if Kawhi somehow came back in Game 2 or Game 3, I feel like they would potentially be the favorites in this series. But I think there's just too much talent on the Warriors' end of the floor. LaMarcus Aldridge has been great this season, but they're going to throw three or four bodies at him, so it's gonna be
you don't think Pops has taken us for a ride out there, that maybe this has all been the long con in San Antonio this year and this is all made up just to mess with the Warriors?
I would love that so much. But I really did at the beginning of the season think this is just some basically revenge Pop is taking for the NBA's new policy on resting players, and this is just some conspiracy theory. But yeah, I don't think that's the case.
So sticking with Pops, what do you think he's going to do to try to salvage what looks like some bad matchups on paper? Does he have any tricks up his sleeve, you think? Is he going to do some kind of a different rotation? Is he going to pull his defense away from the center, which I think is something he might look at? But as a guy who knows the San Antonio team so much, what do you think he can do to try to stop even a Curry-less offense? Is still a pretty potent one out there at Golden State.
Yeah, totally. So in the past, you know, we had matchup success in the Warriors, you know, when they were first beginning their run, when we would really run our offense through Boris Diaw and take away the attention off some other areas of the floor. But with the Warriors not having Curry, I almost don't know what lineup you throw, because both teams are in such uncharted territory. So I think you're going to see a lot of Danny Green on Klay Thompson, and I think they're going to do their thing that they used to do to the Phoenix Suns, where they would let Steve Nash and Amari Stoudemire just have 40, 50 points a game with Kevin Durant. And I think they're going to allow Kevin Durant to go off and really try to lock down Draymond Green and Klay Thompson with a combination of Danny Green, LaMarcus Aldridge, and Kyle Anderson, and pretty much make Kevin Durant beat you by himself, which is probably an unwise thing to do, but you know,
still not great.
Yeah, it's probably their best option at this point, is to see if the Warriors' rustiness and maybe disinterest kicks in a little bit.
Do you think there's any chance Steph comes back in this series, aside from the Spurs having a 3-0 lead in the series? Is there any chance he's on the floor in this first series?
Yeah, I would say the only way that he comes back, from what Steve Kerr and the Warriors have said, is if the series does go really long and, say, the Spurs are able to get it to a Game 6 or Game 7, and basically if he's going to come back for the second round anyway, you know, a Game 7 timeline-wise is really similar to Game 1 of the second round. They're usually a day or two apart. So I would say if it does go really long, you could see Steph Curry in Game 7 or potentially Game 6.
All right, well, I want to move on to Blazers-Pelicans. But real quick, I do want to say that the Spurs, even though they're a 7 seed, still have like fairly decent odds to win the playoffs. The betting lines right now for the Spurs are at plus 6,000. Where the Celtics, Timberwolves, Wizards, Pelicans, Bucks, Pacers, and Heat are all behind them as far as the odds. So plus 6,000, they're not great odds. I mean, clearly the Rockets, the Warriors are at the top of that conversation. But never count the Spurs out, especially with Pop at the helm.
Wallets out, everybody.
That's right, exactly. Like I said, too, the last time they were a 7 seed, they upset the Mavs in the first round in 2009, 2010. So it can happen. But moving on to Blazers Pelicans real quick, you guys think Anthony Davis and company can overcome the more favored Blazers in this matchup?
I actually do think the Pelicans are going to win this series.
I
think the Blazers, they weren't playing too well towards the towards the end of the season, if the Spurs had taken care of business in LA on that road trip, the Spurs actually would have moved into the three seed. The Blazers had to fight for their three seed lives the last game of the season against the Jazz. In these early series, a lot of times, I think how it typically shakes out is that it's almost the team with the best player typically wins. And I think that, Nurkic is a good defender and a big body, but he's just one person that they can really throw at Anthony Davis. And the way Anthony Davis has played since the All-Star break, and I think he's going to be really, really hungry. Obviously, that's getting more into theorizing. But, yeah, I think this is going to be a long series, and I really think the Pelicans could upset them.
I think this could be one of the better series of the first round. I'm watching this one and Sixers Heat, and I think those could be the most entertaining, have the best basketball all around.
Yeah, Anthony Davis, I mean, obviously he was fantastic at Kentucky in the early 2010s, but he's really coming into his own every year. It seems that he just surprises us even more. I think the series is going to be a shootout. I think we're going to see a lot of offense. I think it's going to be a lot more competitive than a lot of people are giving it credit for. So I like that pick of the Pelicans. I'm rooting for Anthony Davis as well. So let's see how that one turns out. I like it.
All right, so moving on to Thunder Jazz. What do you guys think is going to happen here?
I really like the Jazz. And, I mean, Donovan Mitchell has just had an incredible rookie campaign. I've heard him accurately, I think, compared to young Dwayne Wade. And yeah, I know you're a Sixers fan, Zach, but I think I would give the rookie of the year
to
Donovan Mitchell. I mean, he's a true rookie. We can get into that later, but
well, that's what his sweatshirt said, right?
yeah, a rookie is a player who graduated. I can't remember what it said, but so I think the Jazz are a fun team, but I think the Thunder are full of their share of flaws, but Jazz are well coached. But at the end of the day, I just think the Thunder have too much talent. I think it'll go long, be back and forth, but I think Donovan Mitchell will wear down towards the end of the series if he's having to chase Russell Westbrook around, and I could see it going to Game 7 and the Thunder just blowing them out in OKC. That's probably my prediction. A long series with an anticlimactic finish.
I feel like Lee Corso over here. That is another great pick. I'm really, really high on the Jazz right now. I agree with you on the Rookie of the Year discussion as well, much to Zach's chagrin.
Oh, come on. Come on.
Oh, man. I spent a lot of time on the West Coast. I watch a lot of late night West Coast NBA games. I've loved Donovan Mitchell. He's come on strong as well. I know that he's been down this year. I think Ricky Rubio is poised to have a big playoffs as well. I really like the Jazz in this matchup. But I've been surprised by OKC many, many times. If Russell Westbrook continues to do what he's done the past 2 years in averaging that triple-double, obviously, he's a force to be reckoned with. You shut him down, OKC is done, but good luck shutting him down. I'm still rooting for the Jazz.
All right, fair enough. I think it's going to be a good matchup. I don't really know which way to call this one. I think I would go Jazz as well, but I think it'll be a long series. I agree with you on that, Taylor. You guys have any objections for the sake of time skipping Rockets, Timberwolves? I don't think anybody's calling the Timberwolves to upset the Rockets. Am I right?
Yeah, I think the only way that series gets extended is if Mbah Mute keeps missing time and the Rockets defense really suffers, but Thibodeau and his defense has just been awful translating into the Timberwolves system. And I read earlier the Rockets averaged something like 133 points a game against the Wolves this season. If it wasn't that high, it was really high.
Yeah. So we'll just we'll skip that one for now. How about Cavs Pacers jumping over to the Eastern Conference, the 4 and 5 matchup there? I don't really know which way to go on this one either, because the Cavs to me are in the conversation for the, you know, making it to the finals, but at the same time they're in the conversation for like having abysmal meltdowns in the first round and losing to the Pacers. And the Pacers are guys who can put up a lot of points on you, and you know, it basically depends on which version of the Cavs show up, so I'm not really sure which way to lean on this. I think I'm going to go Cavs, but I'd go Cavs in 6 or 7. What do you think?
Cavs still have a guy named LeBron James, and there is
exactly.
no
which is why he's in the conversation for, which is why the Cavs are in the conversation for making it to the finals, because that's what he does. So yeah, I mean, I think a first round exit is like very unlikely with him, but they've also had these epic collapses this year.
Totally. I think this is the most vulnerable LeBron team since his first stint on the Cavs, and they've definitely done some eyebrow raising things this year. Their defense has been atrocious, but I really can't pick against LeBron until he gives me a reason not to. So
yeah, it's a bold move to pick against LeBron. I think you got to say, though, that Victor Oladipo, who I think is one of the most improved guys in the NBA this year, I think he's a bad matchup for this Cavs team based on where that defense is. And who knows what Lance Stephenson is going to do in a Pacer uniform to LeBron to drive him crazy. I mean, there's some mental things going on in this game that could be a lot of fun to watch. I don't like the matchup between the... as I said, Oladipo and the Cavs. I still think you're an idiot if you ever bet against LeBron outside of the NBA Finals. But I think it's really going to come down to how the Pacers are shooting the ball. And I know that seems like the most John Madden analysis ever. But they've had some really, really weird shot selection recently. They don't seem to be shooting the three very well. They're down to something like 42% on long two-point attempts. If the Pacers can have a good shot selection here and seem to make the good decisions instead of the quick and hasty decisions, I think that they could easily take this to six and possibly seven. If it goes to seven, no chance LeBron loses that. LeBron will own that game seven for sure.
Yeah, you know, I think your Oladipo point is really good, and I think his breakout year makes me think maybe we got the MVP wrong last year with Russ, because the MVP should be someone who elevates the game of those around him. And Russ had an amazing statistical year last year, but the fact that Oladipo went somewhere else and did way better than he did in OKC to me suggests that maybe the MVP should have been Harden last year. But that's another conversation for another day. Let's move on to Celtics, Celtics-Bucks series. What do you guys think is going to happen here? Will Brad Stevens win the coaching matchups even without Kyrie?
Yeah, so this was an absolutely terrible matchup for the Bucks because they're so atrociously coached. But I don't know. I still think that, similar to my logic for going with the Pelicans over the Blazers, I think because of no Kyrie, obviously no Gordon Hayward, I'm just like, I don't know. Maybe I'm getting too caught up with what team has the best player, but I think that's a lot of times what first round matchups really come down to.
Yeah.
I think it could be a long series as well. Like, I think there could be a lot of long series in this first round, more so than usual. But yeah, I think Giannis being so much more talented than anyone else on the Celtics currently, even though they've got some young talent, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, I think the Bucks are going to take it in six or seven.
I agree with all of your points, except your final prediction. I still have the Celtics in six, just because I don't think Giannis gets the help that he needs. I agree that Giannis is the best player on the court in this series. It just doesn't seem like any of the guys around him are truly contributing at all at this point. I mean, they're 22nd in three-point shooting percentage, 25th in three-point attempts, 27th in 3 points made. I mean, there's just no offense as I'm looking at this team night in and night out, is what it feels like to me as the casual fan. I mean, the Bucks force a lot of turnovers. I think the Celtics, even before Kyrie went down, had a pretty average offense. So I think if the Bucks can really focus on that, I totally agree that it could be a really, really interesting series. I'm excited for this one just because of Giannis. He's so much fun to watch out there that I think this could be one of the better series of the first round.
I just really want the Bucks to win because I really want Giannis versus Embiid and Simmons in the second round.
Yes, that'd be awesome. That'd be good. That'd be awesome. Well, let's skip the 1v8 matchup, Raptors, Wizards, and let's just close on the Sixers Heat. So we'll segue into that. And that possible Sixers-Bucks matchup. I do have to point out the Sixers, of course, ended their season with a 130-95 thrashing of the Bucks. So the Bucks ended on a pretty weak note. The Sixers capping their 16-game win streak. That's the first time that any team has won 16 games to close out a season. So they're 16 wins away from a championship. I don't think it's going to happen, obviously. But they're
looking. You don't think they can go 32-0?
As awesome as that would be, I think it would be pretty difficult to do that. Their opponents are a little bit tougher than their final 16 games of the regular season. But I think this Heat matchup is going to be a tough one for them. The Embiid orbital fracture and concussion complicates things quite a bit. But I'm excited about the return of Markelle Fultz. I think Brett Brown's done a great job coaching that guy through his case of the yips. And he's not now the player that we thought he could be, but he's looking like he could be perhaps again. So I think this is going to be a really exciting matchup to watch. And I think the Sixers will go to the Eastern Conference Finals, probably face the Cavs there. And that'll be a really interesting matchup because of the Simmons-LeBron face-off. So what do you guys think, though, on the Sixers Heat?
I think this was probably the worst team that the Sixers could have drawn.
Yeah, agreed.
In the first round, because Spoelstra is a great coach. He is almost like that. He's sort of getting into Pop territory, where people have sort of had that, you know, old adage that Pop could like probably make four guys off the street and one NBA player like a playoff team. I sort of feel like that is happening with Miami and Spoelstra at this point. But at the end of the day, I think it's the Sixers are on a roll, and you just don't have enough talent on Miami's side of the ball, especially with my boy Dion Waiters going out for the season earlier in the year. But yeah, I do think this will be a tougher matchup. I could see this being a type of series where if Miami steals game one, it getting a little more interesting.
Agreed again. So the 76ers have 4-1 odds right now to win the Eastern Conference. So obviously there's a lot of faith in them in Vegas. And I think a lot of it comes not only from the young excitement in Philly right now, but I think it's just the fact that while it's not a great matchup, I still don't think the Heat have a very good half-court offense. And I think that's really where the 76ers can really start mixing this up and doing something to really take advantage of it. Agreed on Eric Spoelstra. I think probably the best thing to happen to Eric Spoelstra in all seriousness was LeBron James leaving Miami. Not because his win total kept going up, but I think he finally got to prove that he was a great coach who didn't just have great veterans in Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, and LeBron calling all the shots, right? I think if the Heat can figure out a way to really use Wayne Ellington the most, I see him as kind of the difference maker on the Miami side of the ball. But overall, I'm still pretty confident in Philly. I don't know if it's just because we talk Philly basketball so often with the 76ers, and I'm paying so much more attention to it on the East Coast. But I think Philly is going to overwhelm the Heat pretty easily. I realistically don't think this will even make a game six. I think this is going to be a pretty easy one for Philly.
And I think if it was one of the situations where if Philadelphia was like the OKC team from back in the day, where they had their young, really talented players like Embiid and Simmons and Covington, throw Fultz in there, I guess, but then they didn't have any veterans around them, I could see the Sixers or the Heat potentially upsetting them in the first round. But with the Sixers veterans like Redick, Bellinelli, Ilyasova, guys who, you know, have been in the league around, have been in the league for a long time, have made some deep runs in the playoffs, and Brett Brown being on the Pop coaching staff, having a championship coaching pedigree, I feel like they're going to be really prepared for the series more so than a typical young upstart talented team would be.
Yeah, great points. Great points. Zach, how are you feeling about your 76ers?
Oh, I'm all aboard the trust the process hype train. I think that this game or the series could go six games. I, like you, Pete, expect it to go five. I think it's a tough matchup for Philly, but I think Brett Brown's done an incredible job coaching these guys, and I think Simmons will be the nearly unanimous rookie of the year, contra what you guys think. Should be the case anyway. And I think they're gonna basically cruise into the Eastern Conference Finals ultimately, and then I think there it gets interesting because the Cavs matchup, which it'll likely be, will be really fun to watch. And I think like you said before, you can't count LeBron out, but for the first round they gotta get through that first. I think they'll handle Miami.
Zach, I don't mean to hijack the podcast, but can I ask you a off the wall question?
Yeah, man.
All right. Go with me on this. In 20 years in Philadelphia, will there be more boys named Joel, Ben, or Carson?
Philly's a football town, and I think for that reason, it'll be Carson. I think Carson's going to be like a massively popular boy's name for the next 5 years. It probably already is. I haven't seen stats on that, but I would bet Carson. And
what if the Sixers win like four titles?
I guess that changes a little bit. I still think that, well, first, I think the Eagles upside's still there, given that Carson was injured even for the Super Bowl run. So it's equally probable that the Eagles go ahead and win four titles. And I think the Super Bowl championships mean more to the city than the NBA championships would. So
fair enough.
Yeah.
And I think Joel is kind of a, you know, difficult pronunciation.
That's true. So. Yeah. That's also a good point.
I cannot believe that. I mean, we obviously skipped over Raptors Wizards because it's a 1-8 matchup, but no one has taken the Raptors to the Eastern Conference Finals. And I think that they've got the coach of the year sitting out there in Casey. So it'll be, I think the Eastern Conference matchups will be good this year.
Yeah, I think so too. I also think it's interesting how heavily weighted the West is, and even the Vegas odds. I mean, you mentioned 4-1 for the Sixers to win the Eastern Conference, but they're 18-1 to win the whole thing, which just speaks to the power of the West. So it'll be interesting. You know, it'll be fun to see an upset, but not sure if it'll happen.
I think that one thought that I have about the playoffs long term, and I'll try to be brief on this, but if the Warriors are vulnerable and if the Rockets do end up going to the finals, I really don't see that being a cakewalk for them if they're facing Cleveland and LeBron on the other side. I just think I have no reason to trust Mike D'Antoni and James Harden at this point.
Right.
And I think if you got LeBron James in the finals with his chance to win a fourth title and he's not having to look at Steph Curry and Kevin Durant, like, I don't know. I couldn't see. I would say that I still think the Warriors are going to end up winning it. I don't think their run is going to be as long as maybe we thought, that it'll come to an end in the next couple of years, but I still think they're going to do it this year. But I think the Cavs have a bit, if they're facing the Rockets in the finals, I don't know. I like the Cavs.
Yeah. So. I think you might be honest on that there. I think Harden has a lot to prove. And so that's the biggest storyline I'm looking at in the West. What is Harden doing throughout this playoffs? And if he gets to the finals, how is he going to perform in the finals? And the Harden versus LeBron matchup potential for the finals, pretty exciting as well. But on that note, we'll end it there. Guys, thanks so much for joining us as always. Thanks to our listeners for listening once again to the Third String Podcast. Hopefully you enjoy this. If you want to follow us on Twitter, you can follow me at Zach Crippen. You can follow Pete at Pete_LeCleve. And you can follow Taylor at the T Young, just like it sounds, pretty easy. Taylor, thanks so much for joining us. Hopefully we can have you back on again soon.